The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here. 101.3 ESPN, all in accounted for. We are back. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy? I almost forgot what I called you for a second. Wow.
Yeah, I haven't been called handsome in, geez, it's been, what, 11 days now. So I kind of missed you. That's about the only thing I missed. But
you've been on
sabbatical. Yeah, this was great, man. I swear, every day at 4:01 as I'm sitting out in the outfield grass watching a game in the 85-degree sunshine, all of a sudden in the distance I can hear,
We thought you were drunk and out of it or had sun poisoning because you texted me saying the Mariners had a great comeback win when, in fact, they had the loss. So you watched an entire game and then had no idea that the Mariners won.
Literally had no idea. This had nothing to do with alcohol. I unfortunately wasn't able to imbibe as much as I'd hoped because every beer was $11.
What?
So, insanity.
Stop it.
Well, it was a big one, but still, $11. I'm not kidding.
And you didn't know who won the game, though?
He didn't know which colors were which?
No, I literally would go. I went to two games pretty much every day. I'd go to the afternoon game and then whatever the night game was, and I had no idea what town I was in or who the teams were playing. I mean, after a while, you realize that, wait a minute, is this Cleveland or is this Seattle?
That's okay, because as far as I'm concerned, the Dolphins won the Super Bowl last year anyway. So I know exactly what you're going through. Did you have a good time, though? Did you have a blast or what?
It was incredible, despite the fact that a certain airline doing everything humanly possible to make my life a living hell for the last 11 days. I went down to Boston.
Well, at least you didn't take a dog with you.
Other airlines.
With help from my friend, I got all the way down to the Woburn commuter lot yesterday in Woburn, Massachusetts, and picked up my car, which it took me 15 minutes to try to get rid of the ice and the snow surrounding my car.
Oh, I could imagine.
It was like an igloo had formed around my car.
So how much did it cost you to have the car in a commuter lot? By the way, we told this story on Wednesday, but we did not give up where your car was in case anyone wanted to steal it.
I'll tell you, if you're going.
Oh, no, I knew.
Yeah. If you're flying out of Boston for a long-term trip. Yeah. Don't go to the Logan Airport parking lot. You know how much money that would have cost me?
No, I said, what was I guessing, about $20, Brady?
He does $20 a day.
It's $28 a day in the economy lot, and it's $40 a day in the regular lot.
I was way off. $40 a day at the airport itself, and then the one like a block or two away. I'm
assuming
that you
shuttle.
That's
the economy lot, which is where I usually stay.
That's $20 a day.
$28
a day.
So I ended up paying
$280.
$7 a day to park in Woburn and simply get on a bus at 4 o'clock in the morning and go down to Logan.
You're lucky.
So do you know how much money I saved by that little 3 a.m. decision to get off at the Woburn exit? Over $300.
Yeah. We were trying to figure it out on the air. And people are like, oh, no, it's not that expensive. I go, if you park at Logan, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, don't park at Logan. Get off at Woburn. It's just north of Boston. The trip is quick. It's like $10.
How is your Airbnb? With the old lady.
I have pictures if you want to see. She never got out of her.
Plays good on the radio.
Pictures of the old lady?
Yeah,
I don't want to see that.
I'll post that on Twitter, though. That'd be fun.
Hey, I got some pictures of the old lady.
I'm not sure I want to see that, though. But, I mean, how was it?
She was great. She never got out of her pajamas, I could tell, the whole time.
That's what happens when you live in Sun City.
She never left her house.
Yeah.
For any reason. She was a sweetie. She was not in great health.
Did she bake cookies?
But she talked about her boys. You know, every week she has different people coming into her Airbnb. She couldn't have been more of a sweetheart.
Oh, that's great. And she wasn't afraid you were a killer? She didn't say you kind of look like a killer?
And I asked her about that. I said,
of course you were. How do you know I'm not a killer?
No, but she says, I said, isn't this kind of a trust factor sort of thing? This Airbnb? You don't know who's coming into your house. Turns out I was semi-normal. But
I'm not so sure about that.
She said, oh, no, all my boys are wonderful. I have the same group every year, the same week. So she just has this rotation of people coming into her rundown condo in Sun City.
She must make good money.
Yeah.
This is
$25 a day is what it costs me.
This is great fodder for the fact that both of you, we have 290 people in our bracket challenge, and Arnie, you're in 287th.
I don't think.
You're in 287th out of 290.
And the other three people probably didn't fill out their bracket fully. If you would have told me I want you to do the worst out of 290, purposely get the wrong teams, I don't think I could have done worse than
287. Literally right on cue, Tristan Williston goes, welcome back, Rich. Can we address the fact that Arnie is 187th out of 190. No, he's actually 287th out of 290.
I don't think. See, I would have picked all of the 16s and UMBC won. So I would have got that one right by accident.
How about that? I've got all these crazy stories, and the first thing is, welcome back, Rich. Oh, quick, get to Rich, Arnie making a fool of himself.
Rich, you're in 248th place out of 290.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of room to make a fool out of yourself, Rich.
And of course, Virginia's gone. Thank you, Retrievers. So I'm that was my champion.
I'm in 105th. I had Duke over UNC, so I'm out UNC, but I do have Duke.
So are we allowed to call ourselves experts just because we work here?
Yes.
I should be fired for that, for being 287 for 290.
But you really do owe Virginia thank you, because Virginia losing got Arizona off the hook, losing to Buffalo.
That doesn't make a difference.
Buffalo.
Yeah. I was in the fetal position.
I didn't even know there was such a school.
We were only an 8-point, 9-point favorite.
Buffalo.
I was so upset.
And you got beat by 20.
I know. I was so aggravated.
Did you yell at the TV or did you just turn it off?
I turned it off with 5 minutes left, and I kicked my son out of the room. I said, you cannot be here watching the game with me.
Oh, you can't be. I mean, I know how horrible I am.
I am a horrible person. Yeah. I am a horrible person. Because he was talking. I go, don't talk to me. I go, go.
Were you crying? Did you cry at all?
No, I didn't cry. I get mad. I get so aggravated.
So do I.
That's my team. I could care less about the Mets and the Knicks and the Giants and the Dolphins compared to my Arizona Wildcats. Oh. So you guys don't understand.
I know. You guys went to an Ivy League school.
You guys didn't go to college. I went.
We didn't go to college?
I spent half my life at college.
You guys didn't go to a real college.
What?
I went to Ivy/athletics.
I realize Linden State pays money to advertise on this station.
It's a great school. You know. It's a great school. Yeah. But I went to the University of Arizona.
But wait. You just said Ivy League education and athletics. We're talking about the same athletic
Arizona
program that's going to get blown up because of all the scandals.
That's what I'm worried about.
We're talking about
seriously,
that.
I was
with no recruits coming in and the head coach that's probably going to get fired. We're talking about that same Arizona?
That same one.
Okay.
I missed you guys.
Just making sure.
We were 1-17 in the Pac-10 when I joined the school. So there you
just
go.
Just making sure we're talking about that Arizona.
I was really in the fetal position. It was horrible. And then all of a sudden the boss calls me up. Oh, we need you to fill in Friday night. And I said, BS. I said, you're just torturing me because you never had me fill in for JT. It's prime time. You hate my guts. You don't want me on the air there, but you're just doing it because Arizona lost. And you're calling me up right after the game. So I know you're full of crap. But I did fill in. They made me fill in.
Look, we had a lot of fun this week. We were hanging out at City Sports Grill, and Sam Adams was there. And then we were at McGillicuddy's at Colchester on Friday and Essex on Saturday and Wilson on Saturday with Guinness and St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, thanks to Guinness, too.
Yeah, we had a blast for everybody. We had a blast with everybody. But on Friday, I was in Colchester, and people were wondering, is Arnie okay? Are we going to hear from him again?
It's horrible.
I said, no, he was crying.
I was upset. I didn't want to work Friday night. It just so happened I happened to be on the air and 16 UMBC won as I was on the air. And it was 21-21 at halftime, and I'm going to I'm saying they're gonna win this game, guys. I know this team, they're gonna win this game.
That was unbelievable. That is why I love March Madness and yet don't pay a lot of attention to college basketball during the regular season.
Can I just say one thing? I think we should write this number down, the Town Fair Tire text line, 802. 655-6672. You could text in your apology to me. You can call in your apology to me.
Why?
And I don't want to. Why?
Why are we apologizing to you? Shouldn't it be the other way around?
No. I totally just proved my point in a matter of 4 days after what I've been arguing for 2 years.
Okay. This is where Arnie's going to get insufferable on Monday.
It is. I just want you to know. And I don't want to call anybody out because of all the people that text in, called in, people at UVM that called me names. Like, what was his name? Dustin? What was his name again, Brady? I forgot his name.
Dustin. Yeah,
where
he's
they
too
said,
busy taking all the hate calls you're about to get.
Dustin, who's like, oh, you know, we can't move up. You know what they would do to us in the Big East? It goes to show you when a team like UMBC, and congratulations to them, can beat the number one team in all of the land, in all of college basketball, I don't want to hear that baloney anymore, that Vermont's not good enough to play in the Big East when they take 10 teams from that conference. That argument is now out the window. I don't want to hear that crap anymore about UVM not able to take the next step. That is now a myth. That's been proven wrong based on what UMBC
said. So you don't think that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing? That was the joy of that. That's not going to happen again.
No, it is going to happen
again.
Okay,
the America East team is going to beat a number one overall seed again in our lifetime.
Another 16 seed is going to beat another one seed that's open, and an America East team is going to win, and more mid-majors are going to win. That's why more mid-majors should be in the tournament, and it really proved my point for everybody that said, we can't compete. That is baloney. And you know what? They even competed against Kansas State and maybe even should have stole that game.
Yep, they handed it away in the last 5 minutes.
There's a difference between being able to win one game singularly and being able to compete for a national championship. There's a difference there.
A lot of those teams, most years there's only about 5 to 10 that are competing for a championship.
Anyway. Okay, so there's a big difference. You're basically saying, UMBC proved it can be done. They could go to the Big East and go 18-1 now. No, they can't.
They can't at the Big East, but I think Vermont could finish 5th, 6th, 7th, which put them in the tournament and brings in a lot more money and puts them up with the big boys.
Let's pull back on this one.
Still on this kick, isn't he?
At 4:35, we're going to talk about how UVM should feel about UMBC's success.
What's coming up on the show? Let's get it going. What's coming up on the show, Brady?
Well, Farnham Brewery, that's where we're broadcasting on Friday out in South Burlington. Look, it's pet-friendly. All dogs are welcome. Come out there. Max Sugar Shack is going to be there doing food also. So that's Friday for the Winter Craft Beer Tour. As for today, the Pats make a flurry of moves. We'll get into that, some of them, in 10 minutes. How UVM should feel about UMBC's historic run at 4:35. Does this Jets move over the weekend mean anything for the Giants? And Forbes ranked the best ballparks. Where do Fenway and Yankee Stadium rank? But first, on the tournament as a whole, so many upsets. Two number one seeds already out. Are we enjoying this tournament? Are people enjoying the tournament? Or have the upsets gone too far?
This is exactly what I was telling you a month ago, that the reason I pay attention to March Madness is exactly what just happened over the last 4 days. That was must-see television, must-hear radio right from the start to me. I would much rather see UMBC and Kansas State than the same old tired teams every year.
I didn't enjoy it because my Arizona Wildcats got eliminated.
I heard they lost.
It just destroys the rest of the tournament for me, so I don't enjoy it in that aspect, but I have enjoyed the upsets. I would have liked a few more buzzer beaters. We have not had that many. I think four.
Michigan.
There was four, but I could use a ton more. I love that stuff. But otherwise, I like the lower seeds that win. I see Mike is giving me a kind compliment that we got to get to. That says, you're losing so much credibility, you sound idiotic. Honestly, stop. We're begging you. So go ahead, Brady.
As far as the tournament goes, look, I love...
Go get him, Mike.
I love history. I love the upsets, too. I love the underdog story. But I do think we're getting to a point where the general fan is going to tune out. I think it's great for the first weekend. When the first weekend happens and there's all these upsets, that's great. But are you thrilled by a Sweet 16 in which your favorite team is out? Are you thrilled by a Sweet 16 in which your office pool bracket is done? Are you thrilled for a Sweet 16 where we're watching Nevada play and Chicago play?
Well, Nevada's a 7, but I want to say this. Here was the question we brought up last night, just out of curiosity. If UMBC did run all the way to the championship and play Duke, would you think ratings would plummet because it was UMBC against Duke? Or would ratings shoot through the roof and say, wow?
They'd be a record.
No, they say it would plummet.
That's insane. No, could you not watch a 16 seed in the championship game against Duke?
They are saying it would not only be bad, it would plummet.
I disagree.
I think in the title game it would go up, but I think leading up to the title game would be down. I don't think that a bracket in which we're watching Nevada and Loyola Chicago.
Right.
And we're seeing,
I agree there.
I think the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight ratings are going to be way down, and I think the tournament needs Kansas, Duke, and Villanova to stay in the tournament as long as possible. Now, Kansas and Duke would meet each other in the Elite Eight, so one of them hopefully can get to the Final Four. But the tournament needs that. Early round is about the upsets, but I almost think there's too many upsets for the general fan to be interested in right now.
Well, they always say the cream will rise to the top, and you know it will eventually. Well, but, I mean, I think these runs, that's what I love. Everybody says that's like the best weekend of sports all year to a lot of people. It's nonstop basketball, and if you get enough games, you're going to get the upsets. And I think the upsets are great. I agree with you, Brady, though. You know what? And I know it won't be Duke-Kansas or Duke-Kentucky or whatever, but you do want to see the best teams playing in the championship.
I will say this. We're proven wrong if an underdog goes to the championship game. Butler I believe was one of the lower rated championship games in recent history when they went to the finals.
Yeah, they went twice.
Yeah. So, you know, are we wrong? I mean, I thought, well, again, they're not a 16 seed, but I thought everybody would get into it and go, oh, my goodness, this is the best story ever. And all I hear is, I wouldn't give a damn. I wouldn't watch it because I don't know who UMBC is, or I could care less, they're a 16 seed or something like that. Right.
I think the 16 seed story, yes. If it were a 10 seed, I don't think that that's as interesting. And I don't buy into, you know, this whole narrative about Syracuse being some lovable underdog. I know they're an 11 seed, but it makes me sick when Syracuse fans talk about, oh, what an upset beating Michigan State. I know there are some scholarship limitations because of some NCAA sanctions on Syracuse, but you're still Syracuse. You have a Hall of Fame coach, an Olympic coach. You churn out NBA players. You've won a national championship. That's the only thing outside of lacrosse that your school is invested in fully. And you've got grade A facilities. So, and you're one of the maybe few elite programs, what used to be UConn,
yeah,
in the Northeast. So you can kind of, if you do it right, get a run on the Northeastern talent. Syracuse is not an upset beating anybody as far as I'm concerned.
Brian in Richmond says he's jealous about UMBC, but happy for the conference. That's the way it should be, like that for UVM fans. It should be.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know if we wanted to talk about this maybe later in the show too, but I was absolutely yelling for UMBC at the end of that game yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I would never cheer for them for any reason except for that.
Vic in Burlington said, I totally agree with Arnie. I would rather have UVM to be a St. Bonaventure than a UMBC. I think he means
a more middle team in a good
top
conference.
Right, right.
We're St. Bonaventure. So top
team,
three,
yeah,
school in,
yeah,
the A-10.
Right, right. You know what? I totally agree. Completely, exactly my point. I would rather for them to be a top three, top four team in the Atlantic 10 and fight it out to get into the NCAA tournament every year than to play in the American East.
So are you guys saying it's just me to want Loyola Chicago to get to the championship game? I mean, I would love that.
No, people,
how great would that be?
People say they want it, but I think ratings would go down.
If Loyola Chicago's against Duke, maybe people are okay with it. If Loyola Chicago ends up playing, you know, an 8 seed, then I don't think people are okay with it.
There'd be no upset factor. Yeah,
there's too many upsets right now because the teams are now unfamiliar. Gone is Virginia, gone is Michigan State, gone is, especially up here, where we're not as college basketball crazed. You spend all year kind of lukewarmly checking in and hearing about Virginia and Michigan State and Arizona and Duke and Kansas and Nova. And you start to know this group of 10 to 12 teams. And when seven of them are instantly gone at the beginning of the tournament, it's great for the beginning,
yeah,
but then you're left wondering, okay, my bracket's done, my team is done, and now I'm looking at a bunch of people I've never heard of.
Yep. No, see, you have to have the David and Goliath, at least for me. This is my own personal opinion. You've got to have David against Goliath to make it attractive. If you've got a 9 against an 11 in a national championship game, that's not appealing. If you've got an 11 against a 1, to me, it absolutely is.
You know, we were talking about this 1979. I know we go way back there, but that was Larry Bird, Magic Johnson.
Yep.
But look at the teams. Michigan State, Larry Bird, who first started his career at Indiana, transferred after 2 weeks because he hated Bobby Knight, Indiana State, the Sycamores, who haven't been relevant since 1979. Do you know who the other two teams were in that Final Four besides Magic and Larry? University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school,
yeah,
and a once powerhouse, which is no longer powered, DePaul, who was in Chicago with Mark McGwire and
Meyer,
those guys. Yeah, Ray Meyer. So that, to me, would be a great mix of different teams in the Final Four. I don't know if people would still want that.
Real quick, other notes on the tournament. So in Xavier losing late last night to Florida State, this is just the fourth time since seeding again in 79 that 2-1 seeds failed to reach the Sweet 16, first time since 2004. And one of my other biggest takeaways from the tournament is just the poor end-of-game execution. You know, teams taking 2-for-1 when they don't need to, teams not taking 2-for-1s when they should, missing free throws at the end. UMBC could have won that game last
night.
9
missed free throws.
You know, they were 8-for-17 or whatever at the line.
Awful.
Lyles, who shoots 85%,
right,
misses 3 of them,
yep,
you know, in 3 consecutive trips to the line. The Houston kid, I feel awful for him, missed 2 free throws right before the Michigan 3.
Did you see what he did afterwards? After the game, he went
stood on the court for 45 minutes at the free throw
line. He's a 50-year senior.
Yeah.
He's a fifth-year senior.
I mean,
that's what it's all about, man.
Inability to close out games. Xavier blows a double-digit lead, and Cincinnati blows a 22-point lead.
Yeah, late.
And way too many charges.
Yeah.
Way too many offensive fouls being called.
All right, we're off and running. First segment in the books. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
The Patriots made some moves. We'll talk about the defensive moves they made over the weekend in the 4-Minute Football Fix.
Busy Monday right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. You're not playing hoops tonight, Brady? You're a little worried? A little afraid of tonight?
No, I have to work until 7.
Afraid.
Oh. Not everyone can get out of here at 6:01.
Wow, I was going to give you the day off tonight. Oh, you should have told
you
me
weren't.
That was my bad.
By the way, did you park the van this weekend after your event at McGillicuddy's? It was parked into a snowbank.
No, I think my wife did.
You had 35 parking spaces out there, all empty, clear, sunny day, and somebody slammed it right into the snowbank.
It had to have been my wife then.
Yeah, I think it was.
It had to have been my wife.
Did you see that, Brady?
No, I did not. No.
It's very bizarre.
But when the boss calls me in tomorrow, I know who to blame.
There you go. Yeah, blame it and say, just blame it on my wife.
Seems to be a problem with the undercarriage.
I don't understand why. How does that happen all the time, for crying out
loud?
So
she's as crazy a driver as you are.
She's worse. I don't like the way she drives. Milo says, I'd rather have UVM at the top of the America East League than to be the Binghamton of the Atlantic 10. What makes you think you're going to be the Binghamton of the Atlantic 10? I don't understand. You think so little of UVM basketball that that's where you're going with that?
No, but I mean, you're going to have to make an assumption that this team is going to continue to be exactly what they are right now. That's a lot to ask. I mean, are they going to go 15-1 or whatever in the conference every year?
No, but you could be just as good as Dayton, Richmond, George Mason, St. Louis, VCU Rams. They're all 500 in that league. I want you to know that.
They'd give them a – I mean, I think they'd play – don't you agree? I mean, you hear those teams. That's a pretty good matchup, but I don't think they certainly wouldn't be a one-loss team.
No, they would not be a one-loss team. What you have to figure out is, I'm honestly sick of this conversation at the moment, and I think I don't even want to go there with you anymore on this. I think this team needs to stay where they are, dominate the league, prove they can win the league over and over and over and over and over and over and over in the way that Gonzaga has, in the way that Butler did, in the way that Creighton proved they could be a top two team in the Horizon League before they moved. Xavier made an Elite Eight before they moved even from the A-10 to the Big East. UVM is not there.
All right, let's get to the 4-Minute Football Fix. We got some Patriots stuff going on. So what's going on there?
The Patriots made some defensive moves over the weekend. They also made some offensive moves we'll get to in hour number two. But on the defensive side, they signed defensive end Adrian Claiborne. They signed him from the Falcons, 2 years, $12 million. Had 9.5 sacks last year, and that helps the Patriots pass rush. They also traded for Jason McCourty, the brother of Devin McCourty. Jason McCourty comes from the Browns, and they gave Patrick Chung a raise and a contract extension. Which move is the most impactful in your mind?
It's certainly not getting McCourty. I promise you that. Matter of fact, the Browns wanted to go ahead and release him.
Yes.
They were going to release him. Nobody wanted to trade for him, and they said he can't make the team. He's probably not going to go ahead and make the Browns.
Can't make the Browns.
Can't make the Browns.
Well, he was ranked number 17, actually, at the defensive back position.
If you can't make the Browns...
Maybe it was his contract.
I don't know, Brady, if a guy goes to you, I've had like 10 jobs. I keep getting fired. Market's 500 and above. I don't know. Maybe New York, L.A., Chicago. Not for you, big boy. I don't know if this guy was going to get cut by the Browns. I'm not so sure I want to run out and get him. But they do because they had the holes to fill, and they had to fill it in for cheap. So that's what you get. Remember, I told you this was what's going to happen. You're going to have to fill those holes, fill it cheap. That's what you're going to get for something like that.
As far as these go, I think they're all good moves, but they all worry me in that what the Patriots need to do is get younger. The Patriots have to figure out a way to, A, stay as competitive as possible and capitalize on the Tom Brady window, so that leads you to veterans like this, but you also have to turn the roster over enough so that you are not just falling off a cliff the minute that Tom Brady falls off the cliff. McCourty's 30 years old. Claiborne's going to play this season at 30 years old, too. And Chung's been in the league for a decade. These players are older players. They help you win a Super Bowl or closer. They put you closer to winning a Super Bowl this season, which is good. But long term, you're still an aging roster, and that's what worries me.
But aren't most of these pretty safe deals? I mean, I know the Claiborne one was for 2 years and $12 million. I mean, most of the ones I saw were a year or 2 years. We're not talking about a long term thing here. I mean, it's win now. I mean, I understand what you're saying about getting younger, but if they're going to have that win-now mentality, then a 1 or a 2-year deal makes sense to me because that's how long you're going to have Tom Brady for.
That's what I said. I think they are good moves. I think they help you win a Super Bowl this year, but my ultimate concerns are still there. The things that come with age, like injury, they are still very, very real.
I don't know what to make of the Claiborne one. When I first heard it, I thought, oh, that guy, I remember him. He's pretty good. He was the guy that had the 6 sacks against Dallas. Trouble is, he didn't have much of anything other than that game. I mean, you look at his total, you see 9.5 sacks, had a pretty promising campaign with Atlanta. It was a career high, but he had all but 3.5 of them in one game. So I don't know. I think he's more of an edge guy. He's going to be a guy. That's what they brought in a guy like James Harrison to do, and he did it fairly effectively in a very short-term time, obviously. But I think he's going to be able to set the edge for them. That's going to be very important because that was an issue last year.
Why am I assuming when you guys said they're doing it to win now, you're talking about for Tom Brady?
Yes, they're doing it to win. Tom Brady is there. They're doing it to capitalize on Tom Brady.
I think they're doing it. I think they're doing it to win one more year for Bill Belichick, and then he's going to walk away. I think he's just slapping this roster together saying, we'll go ahead and keep everything we got. I'm going to do it one more year. I'm going to try to get back to the Super Bowl while I have that my window. I'm going to try to win it this year. If I don't, I'm going to walk away. And then that's why I'm signing these guys to 1- and 2-year deals. The hell with Tom Brady, is he thinking? It's all about me, Bill Belichick. I'm doing one more year, then I'm going to walk away.
So you're falling into that Belichick trap that everybody else seems to be right now, that it's just he's just become an impossible to deal with buffoon of a coach.
And pretty much.
We saw this on Nesson over the weekend. Also, there was that line, remember, at the end of the last Tom versus Time where Giselle said,
Arnie,
he said, Tom just wants to feel appreciated at work. Yeah. He just wants to have fun. And then what did we see Gronk post on Amendola's Instagram? Be free and be happy.
Be free.
Let me tell you something. Tom Brady and Giselle watch those episodes 1,000 times before they said, okay, let it go to print or let it go out on the air. You don't think they could have said, you know what? Take the part out where I said he just wants to be appreciated. I think everybody's going to take that part out.
I took that as a message also. I'm usually not into the conspiracy theory, but I take that as a message. On McCourty, he was ranked 17th in Pro Football Focus in terms of defensive backs last year. You put him in the slot, maybe he could go outside, but I don't know if he's an outside player at this point for this roster. You lose Malcolm Butler, you had a guy to replace. You lose Johnson Badamosi, who I know we don't care about, but he was on the roster last year, and he started when Stephon Gilmore was hurt. So you've lost him, you've lost Butler, now you've got Gilmore and Rowe and McCourty battling it out for 1, 2, and 3.
Talent is talent, and we know what McCourty is, but do you think that he ups his level a little bit with the inspiration of playing with his brother and finally playing for a winning program?
I don't know that he ups his level. I just know that when a team is so disciplined around you, as the Patriots generally are, you're going to show out better because other people aren't making mistakes around you, which is what happens in Cleveland. The more disciplined play, I think, helps him. I just wonder how this all impacts the draft. The Patriots, they need a running back. Well, they just signed Jeremy Hill. We'll get to that in hour number 2. Now, do they not take a running back because they've got 4 on the roster again? We know they need a quarterback. How high up are they going to take that quarterback? They signed Claiborne. They're going to have a healthy Dietrich Wise. You think they need the pass rush the most of anything. Mm-hmm. Now they've addressed it to some degree. How does this affect what the Pats do in the draft? That's what I really want to know.
So what was his reaction as Rex Burkhead news came
out? I was very happy.
Extremely
happy.
He was
like a kid in a candy store.
Did you cry?
Yes,
what did you do?
I wanted
to cry. Tears of joy.
Was there emotion?
I hope that Jeremy Hill doesn't even make the team because I want Rex getting all the carries. I want Rex with all the carries. 1,000-yard season for Rex.
How about 2,000?
If I play fantasy football this year, which I will with you guys in the fantasy league, I'll name my team after Rex.
All right, this is what you get for saying no more UVM basketball talk. Joe and Burley said, no more UVM basketball talk hockey. Norwich women won a title, and you're going on and on about a team that lost weeks ago. Sean Burlington.
And we're how clear in Northfield, Vermont.
And by the way,
Norwich won 2-1, and we'll talk with Ray Biggs of D3Hockey.com at 6:40 at Champlain Valley Game Night.
Wow, look at that there. How about that
nice
there?
Nice try, though.
And by the way, John says, I don't even know where it starts on John. I don't know. It just says, upsets make March Madness. It's wonderful to see a team of underdogs take a team of one and done. So
I agree.
There you go on that one. I'm curious to see how that is. All right, Brady, is that the Patriot news out there?
That's the 4-minute football thing.
We're going to get to those other Patriot news we're going to get to later on, though, because I have a theory. Remember that we talked about this was it Wednesday? We were talking about the running back, and I said, well, I got to see what they're going to do and if they're going to go ahead and sign one, and then I'll tell you who I want in the draft and all that, and boom, we went ahead and signed one. I remember talking about that. I think it was Wednesday because we had Thursday and Friday off, so we'll get to that later on. What's coming up? The Champaign Valley Auction is back. Tell everybody about that.
Yeah, the auction is back. We do it a couple times a year, and it's always fun. Save up to 75% or more on local dining, retail, skiing, grocery, fitness, spa, grocery, automotive, overnight stays, whatever you want, basically. It's there online at ChampainValleyAuction.com. It ends Friday at noon, which is this Friday, the 23rd. I mean, and Rich, how about for starters? A great item like our friends over at Yipes Auto of Northern Vermont, you can get a $150 gift card.
Yeah.
And since they're also giving out the prizes in our March Madness bracket, which none of us are going to win, we might want to head over there.
Yeah, what would happen if we finished first? Just out of curiosity.
I would get myself an automatic car starter so I don't have to sit and defrost my car for 8 hours.
The thing for me that I go crazy about on this stuff and get very involved in is the dining. I mean,
oh, yeah,
these are places I go all the time anyway. You might as well pay half price for it.
Exactly. I'm looking at the Bluebird Barbecue stuff also. So, nice. You know, I got my eyes hooked up on that. By the way, my wife sends in a picture of where she parked. She's very upset with you. Yeah. So there you go.
No, it's fine now. They were able to, I assume, tow it out with some sort of bulldozer product.
The overnight stay at the Stoweflake.
Oh, you love that. Oh, you love that.
They had a hot tub. It was snowing, and I was in the hot tub.
Look at you.
What more could you want?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Stowe, can you imagine what Stowe must have been like this weekend?
It was so
seen the traffic heading south as I was coming up from Boston.
It was
yesterday.
So cold, though. I heard the skiing wasn't so good this weekend. The wind was unbelievable Saturday.
It was, but the traffic of Flatlanders heading home from skiing yesterday on 93 was comical.
All right, you can start the bidding now. It goes through until Friday.
Friday.
All right, so get on that now. Go to the website. All right, what do we have coming up next? I don't know. Should we talk about UVM men's basketball? Brady, people seem to be a little bit upset. Yeah. It's like talking about your ex who left you and is now dating somebody rich in a beautiful mansion.
How do you think UVM feels and should feel about UMBC's historic win over Virginia? We'll get into that.
Bitter and salty. All that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow morning on Golic and Week. Hey. Back to the huddle. You can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Rich is back. Brady's here. Arnie's here. It is a Monday. Getting things started off fresh here. Brady, what do we got coming up now? A little UVM, which has ended their season a long time ago, but UMBC carried the torch for them, Brady.
Yeah, UMBC carried the torch to the America East. The historic win, first ever for a 16 seed over a 1 seed on the men's side. And the question is, how should UVM feel about UMBC's performance? And I think there's a lot of different factions to this. There's the UVM fans, there's the UVM players and coaching staff, and there's the UVM administration. I think there's three different groups of people here, and I think all three of them could have potentially very different feelings.
Can we just cut the BS up about saying, oh, we're so happy for them? Because that's just
not BS. I was thrilled.
Okay, I'm talking about the UVM players.
Oh,
fans. Okay,
I have seen zero players say they were happy.
Yeah, political. Because if you ask them, the politically correct answer is, "Oh, we're very happy for them. They're carrying the torch for the American East." If I'm a player for University of Vermont, I'm jealous as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I am jealous as hell. I'm like, we had them down. We beat them by 43 points combined the first two games. We had them down 30-21. That was supposed to be us. Sure, you could use it as motivation, but that's not the question Brady asked. How do you feel? If I'm a UVM player, I am bitter as hell. I'm like looking at my ex-girlfriend going out with some rich doctor while I'm working at some desk job trying to pay my bills. That's how upset I am.
No, I agree. And I'm sure that's how they felt, and I'm sure that's the way they reacted. But to the media, they had to say the right thing, and I'm sure that's exactly what they did. Going over to the fan point of view, and I don't know how you guys feel, but I was absolutely thrilled. I'm screaming at my television as they just could not make any shots, and they kept missing free throws in the last 5 minutes of that Kansas State game. But, I mean, they're all diving to prevent backcourt violations.
I saw that three times.
They had a double dive. I mean, how cool was that? And everybody in the place seemed like they were cheering for them. And I just – not just do I cheer for an underdog in March Madness and the David and Goliath thing I love about March Madness, and it draws me in as a guy who doesn't watch much in the regular season. But when you've got a team from America East doing it, how can you not like that?
I absolutely was rooting against UMBC on Friday night.
Wow.
He hasn't changed.
On Friday night, I was rooting against UMBC, and that's odd for me because I'm all about history. I'm all about things that we've never seen before. I like those storylines. But as somebody who considers myself invested in this UVM program, and it's, look, yes, I'm from Albany. My brother went there. I've worked at Albany. I like those guys. I will root for Albany in most situations. I consider myself a UVM fan also, and I'm invested in this program. And I was annoyed that I was getting texts about, oh, my God, what about UMBC? And I'm just thinking to myself, UVM should be in this tournament. UVM should be doing – UVM should be making itself a household name right now, not UMBC. UVM is better than UMBC. And they weren't better than them one time this year. One time at the wrong time, they didn't play better than UMBC. But they're a better team. They're a much better – UMBC had one player in double figures here at Patrick Gym in the America East title game. And all of a sudden, all of these guys are going off against Virginia. That was a fluke win. And it's cool that it happened, and it was historic. But on Friday night, I found myself so salty and bitter that UVM wasn't on the national stage. When yesterday came around – I started rooting for UMBC. I enjoyed the little guy yesterday, but on Friday night I wasn't rooting.
Chris
for
in Essex said, "Arnie, your Arizona business is coming out here in Vermont. We always pull for the underdog." Well, you just heard Brady's rant on that. So,
well, I just thought it was really cool, kind of watching a guy like KJ Mora, who we can all relate to. He's about 5'5" and weighs about 100 pounds, soaking wet with his little headband there, and he's a pain in the butt at Patrick Gym, and always was. And he won't be missed as far as UVM goes. But I just thought it was kind of cool seeing that guy getting involved and driving the lane against a number one seed. I thought it was great fun to watch.
I'm like Brady. I felt like every time I saw the success that went to UMBC, whether it was with their Twitter account or, you know, all the attention they were getting, I kept saying that should be UVM getting all that attention.
All right, let me ask you this. Do you think UMBC's win over a number one seed is good for recruiting for all America East teams, including UVM?
I think so. That's part of the point here. The players on UVM, I think, are salty. And I think maybe they won't tell you, but I think they would have to be jealous, angry, bitter, all of the above. The administration, the league as a whole, this is nothing but a good thing. I think we're going to have Jeff Shulman on Wednesday. Nice. I expect that he's going to tell us this is great for the conference.
Of course. Right.
He might be unhappy that it wasn't UVM, as I imagine that he is, at least privately. But the conference, just for making the tournament, no matter which team from the league makes the tournament, the conference gets $1.7 million. And that gets spread out to every team.
Wow.
So just for making the tournament. So whether it was UVM, UMBC, or anybody else, the league gets $1.7 million, and that gets distributed among the teams. Hmm. For winning a game, you get double that. So UMBC's win got the league another $1.7 million, of which UVM is going to get some of that money. If all of that money gets evenly distributed, UVM's going to get $364,000 in its athletic department. That's a big deal.
That's amazing.
So that is big for the school. It raises the profile of the league. I don't think that it's going to translate this way, but Arnie keeps saying, oh, let's get the America East to be a two-bid league. At least it puts the exposure out there for the league. All of that is good. I think the players themselves should be bitter, but I bet you to a man, every player, including the coaches, or every coach and administrator would say this is nothing but good for the league.
The Big West, not the Big West, is that the one Gonzaga's in? That became a two-bid league, even though St. Mary's didn't make it this year. The West Coast, they made it the year before that, and so a lot of people said Middle Tennessee should have made it. That would have been incumbent.
Conference USA, though.
Yeah, I mean, but
Conference USA is a lot bigger than the American East.
But East Tennessee, I believe, also tried to make that a two-bid league, and that's in the Southern Conference, I think. But, yeah, there's got to be more of the I've been saying this, more of these mid-majors as they, you know, is you have so many great players out there where one or two could make the difference. I mean, geez, man. You got to give him more of a chance than that. Yep. It's just unbelievable. You know, he was on Virginia Commonwealth. He couldn't get into the game. He averaged 1 minute a game. He sat at the end of the bench.
Yeah. And then he went to Robert Morris.
He didn't play there at all.
The one thing I wonder now, though, adversely on the league, is are we going to get to a point where both John Becker and Ryan Odom leave the league? Ryan Odom's the coach at UMBC. You know he's going to be courted now by other teams.
They're offering a 7-year deal at about $260,000 most.
Well, he's already got a 7-year deal at UMBC.
Yeah. They want to bump it up to $260,000, I think.
So he was already making $225. That doesn't sound like that big of a raise.
Well, they said that's they want to pay him as much as they can with within the realm of possibility, I guess is what they said.
So UMBC, you know Odom at UMBC is going to get recruited to larger schools. And his dad's been a high major coach before, so you kind of figure it's in his bloodline.
He's like 40, though, isn't he?
Yeah, it looks about
40. Yeah, he's been around a while.
So, does it matter with him that they have a brand new gazillion-dollar arena? I mean, doesn't that potentially keep him there?
Why? You've already done...
Well, I understand, but I just wondered if you thought that matters, because they just finished it,
obviously. It would have mattered to me if they hadn't already done what they've done. What more can he really do at UMBC? He's already won a game in the tournament, which is what we're trying to get Vermont to do.
Right.
He's already pulled the greatest upset in the history of the tournament. I don't know.
Outside and he's losing two of the top players.
He's losing his top players. His recruiting class for next year is probably already close to done enough that he can't even capitalize on this win yet until the following year. I don't know what more there is for him to do.
Yeah, this is sort of Tom Brennan after Coppenrath and Sorrentine and Mopajila and all those guys are out the door, too. I mean, it almost feels like that. You know, obviously, TB went in a different direction with his career, but... You know, I suspect you're right. I think the payday is going to be there for him somewhere.
So you think he's going to go?
Put it this way. I don't think him and Becker are both back in the American East.
I think there's an opening at University of Rhode Island because I think Danny Hurley is going to take that. I brought that up a long time ago.
Take the UConn job?
I don't know what job he's going to take. I'm not saying it's going to be the UConn job. I think there's going to be a lot of other openings that are going to be interested in Danny Hurley. That's going to open up a very interesting University of Rhode Island job, more than just a mid-major, and I would think that Odom or Becker would want to go after something like that.
I don't think that both of them are back. And you're right. On the Twitter account, look, the UMBC Twitter guy got a lot of love this weekend.
Yes, he did. Look, oh, my goodness.
I thought he was funny, too, but it started really annoying me when he was like, hey, just reminder, we've got an $85 million event center that needs sponsoring if you want to get in on the fun. Like, dude, shut up. I thought it was funny for a while, but give me a break. Shane in Burlington's got a question. He goes, can you explain the $1.7 million tournament award more? Is that an NCAA kickback? So we'll talk about that. In doing so each team that gets into the tournament gets $1.7 million for their league. So if you get 9 ACC teams in, there's 9 different installments of $1.7.
And plus, every time they win, it's another $1.7.
Yes, every time they get in. So that comes from an NCAA fund, and it is an NCAA fund. So the America East got $1.7 million from UMBC getting in. Because they won, the league gets another $1.7. Here's the interesting part. That money... It does get filtered down to every school, but the league can separate that money. It doesn't have to be evenly distributed. Mm-hmm. They could give more to certain schools than they do to others. They could give more to UMBC if they wanted to, but if you distributed it evenly, it would be $364,000 each.
All right. Alex in Moncton said UVM players should be annoyed. They have no one to blame but themselves. They won many games this year despite often being out-hustled. How many times did they have to come from behind against inferior opponents in playoff sports? The W often goes to the team that wants it more, not always the most talented. Amen to that.
I was as far away as you could be practically for all of this. What was the mood around here? Was everyone pissed, or was everybody sort of just bummed, or what was the mood after they lost that game to UMBC?
Everything.
Yeah. Everything and everything.
Yeah, teams were, fans were disappointed. Fans were sad. Some fans were super appreciative. Some fans were... Becker came on the air with us on Monday and said that the fans had been spoiled by the success that we've had, and this shouldn't be an expectation every year that you just walk through the conference and get to the tournament. So there was a lot of people on a lot of different sides. I got one email over the weekend from a guy who said that he hates this UVM team because he thinks that they've gotten too cocky. So there's been a lot of different opinions.
Boy, have times changed in the last 30 years at Patrick Jim.
All right, let's come back. We'll finish up hour number one. We'll get a little Bruins talk in. Major move going on. All right, here on 101.3 ESPN.
The commercials are over, and the guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, cruising along on this Monday afternoon. Remember, Monday Mirage is coming up at about 20 past the hour. Next hour, stick around for that. We got the spring training report, of course, last story standing. Let's get to some Bruins stuff. Bruins make a major move or major announcement. I could say both. What's going on, Brady?
Yeah, Ryan Donato, Team USA hockey star from the Pyeongchang Olympics, he not only is leaving Harvard, he's not only signing with the Bruins, he's going to be up with the big club tonight. He's going to be on the third line for those battered Bruins as they take on Columbus, and you can listen over on 960 The Zone.
That was quick. He's going to be on the Sierra Gionta line. 21. He was a junior this year at Harvard. Huh? He scored almost a goal a game.
He was fourth in the NCAA in scoring with 26 goals, and to be fourth in the NCAA with a lengthy Olympic break, right. You know, that's almost a month. You're talking about training and the games themselves. I mean, fourth in the NCAA. This is a guy they think could be an impact guy down the stretch, like Charlie McAvoy.
And a second-rounder, too. It's not like he was a number one pick or anything, but he went to college, and he's been great. He played for his dad, Ted Donato, another former Bruin. And he lit it up at the Olympics against the best competition, too. And,
I mean,
they need him right now. They've got so many injuries.
Give me equated to what? Even though Devers came up and played well, is it like a AAA guy coming up there or somebody from the G League coming up to the NBA? Or
it's Charlie McAvoy last year. Same time, same Boston and school. Not the same school, but another Boston school.
I think it's easier to make the transition from college hockey to the NHL, or no, it isn't.
And his contract means he's, like Brady said, he's going to be in uniform tonight. So,
he's got the two-way contract, which means that he's going to make bigger money if he's in the NHL and smaller money if he's in the AHL. And, you know, it's weird how that works because in 2 years he's going to become a restricted free agent. And they've got a few of those guys between McAvoy and DeBrusque is in that group. They got a few guys that are going to be restricted free agents at very young ages.
Well, I'll tell you what, that road trip they just finished wasn't great. They went 2-2. They a miracle comeback to beat Carolina and Raleigh the other night. But that win Saturday night at Tampa, I'm sitting there going,
domination.
Man, I mean, you can't play better hockey than this.
Domination.
They're missing DeBrusque. They're missing Bergeron. Backus took a huge cut to the right leg. They're missing McAvoy. They're missing Zdeno Chara. These are not, you know, these are not unimportant
What number is he going to wear?
Seven.
Seven. I just want to go.
Wait a minute. How is he going to wear seven?
Wait, that's Bobby. No, that's not Bobby.
That's Esposito. You can't have seven.
You can't have seven. That's retired.
It was Raymond Bork, and then remember he took the
Bobby
uniform
Orr
off.
Bobby Orr was four, right?
Four was Orr.
Okay, so.
No, Esposito's seven. He definitely can't
have seven.
Okay, I'll get it back to you after the
break. Wow, look what you did. You upset him now. Look at that there, Rich.
No, I was just wondering how they do that, because remember when Raymond Bork and they had the night for Esposito or whatever,
right,
and Bork took off the shirt to reveal 77?
Right.
How about 17?
There you go.
That's possible.
That's better. My kid's better than him anyway, so there you go. Hour one of the bus.
Yeah, 17.
We'll come back. Brady will have a SportsCenter update, and we'll get you ready for hour number two.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN, about 20 minutes away from Monday Mirage. Stick around for that. We'll have the spring training report. We got Last Story Standing. Let's tell everybody what's coming up this week, though, Brady.
Well, Friday, we're continuing the 101.3 ESPN Wintercraft Beer Tour. We are going to be out at Farnham.
Nice.
Ale and Lager over in South Burlington. That's going to be fun because it's a cool vibe. They've got great food coming out. Max Sugar Shack, the food truck, is going to be there. Remember, they had the tacos.
I love that place.
The tacos in a bag. We had those earlier in the summer. Well, earlier in the summer, last summer, when we were doing a remote. So they'll be there. More great beer, more great fun. It's pet-friendly, so the dogs can come out, too. So you have no excuse for not coming out.
And how was the Stowe gig? I missed it, and I felt terrible about
it. Oh, it was awesome. It was great.
I hear it was great.
It was
we got they gave free food for everybody, but we didn't tell them that you weren't going to be there, so we ate your free food also.
Okay.
So it was
if
great.
They'd known I wasn't going to be there, obviously, they would have canceled the whole thing. So
Now, this tour's been good, going on to all the different places and stuff like that. It has been a lot of fun. So
yeah, we really enjoyed it.
It's been great. All right, Brady, what's coming up here? Because we got some Patriots stuff to get to, but they've been making more than just a few moves. I feel like they've been like a step behind all the other teams that are making major moves, but they made a few moves also some more.
I don't know that the Patriots needed major moves, though. This is a team that got to the Super Bowl. They didn't have, you know, going into free agency, they didn't have major needs. Now they've got to do some kind of plug and play to fix the holes of guys that have left behind, Butler and Lewis, et cetera, Amendola. But on the offensive end, the Pats traded for wide receiver, kickoff return man Cordero Patterson yesterday, and they signed running back Jeremy Hill, formerly of the Bengals. What do you think of these moves?
I think it's pretty okay move to sign Jeremy Hill. I'm not going to go crazy and say, oh, that's fantastic. And I mean, you know, I think he's more of a feature back that I like, and I know that you don't like, Brady. What it does give the Patriots a chance to do is now have him as their back and then take a youngster in the draft, which is running back heavy, and get yourself a youngster that you're going to like, bring him along slowly, so that means it's like a two-third to one-third carry, or however you want to mix it up, if you got a third running back, or, you know, or somebody else you want to give the ball to, so maybe it's a third, a third, a third, but at least you're bringing in a rookie and not just like a bunch of veterans out there.
Seems like this is a couple of high draft picks who were really good in the beginning and have faded for various reasons over the last couple of years.
In Jeremy Hill, look, it's a low-risk, potentially high-reward move. This is a guy who was a second-round pick in 2014. He had 1,000 yards in his rookie year. He had, you know, 800 yards and then 750 yards, and then this year barely played. He's only 25 years old. He has gotten 1,000 yards before. If all goes perfect, then sure, you have a diamond in the rough that you got for essentially no money, and really, of that $1.5 million, only $150,000 of it is even guaranteed. So it's really a low-risk flyer.
But finish what you were going to say. If all goes perfect, they'll have 1,000 yards. Is that what you were going to say?
No, I'm saying if all goes perfect, then, yeah, you get the 1,000-yard rusher.
But that's
that
bad, I thought, because you don't want one guy having 1,000 yards. You want five guys. Yeah, but
I don't see Hill being an impact player for the Patriots. You've already got – you've now committed 3 years and $10 million to Rex Burkhead. You're not giving him the ball to give it
to
Jeremy
Hill.
Well,
that's why I said a third, but that's not even –
well, good. You've got James White also, and you've got Mike Gillisley on this roster too. So – I don't see with those four. In fact, this move is good because it's low risk, high reward, but I don't like it because it stunts your ability to take a running back in the draft. If Hill makes this team, you've got Gillisley, you've got White, you've got Burkhead.
Can they save any money by getting rid of like Gillisley?
You might be able to get rid of Gillisley.
I can't take him anymore. So, I say that's a mistake.
I mean, isn't Hill pretty much Gillisley? I mean, you look at the two of them and their skill sets, and it's just a much cheaper Gillisley.
So, fine, you've got – okay, then one of them can go.
Yeah.
You still got three backs. So you're at least not going to spend a high pick on a running back. You're going to be getting another fifth round.
Yeah, you don't have to, though. I think you can get somebody that we've all heard of in the fourth or fifth round. One like, oh, yeah, he was a good feature back for so-and-so or whatever college team was out there. They could still get a good back in the fourth, fifth round.
But I want the next Kareem Hunt. I want the next Alvin Kamara. And now I don't see the Patriots taking a running back high enough to get that guy in the third round. Yes, it's going to have to be a sixth-rounder diamond in the rough or a late fifth-rounder in their case. It's also, as far as Hill goes, he lost his starting job twice. He lost it to Giovanni Bernard and Joe Mixon. Number one, he lost his job twice, and number two, he was allowed to become a free agent, and three, he was willing to sign for essentially no money. That tells me that there's an issue there in that, I mean, yes, I guess it's low risk, high reward, but I'm seeing a lot more of the possible, you know, pitfalls of this deal than great success stories.
You're talking about Hill?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
he lost his job twice and then let him become a free agent.
Yeah, but how come they don't use running back by committee? How come there's not? I don't know who else is on there, but how come it's not a 3-4 running back by committee like the Patriots?
Well, they go through so many running backs, too. I mean, you've got to have three or four of them that can run the ball because everybody gets hurt. I mean, it just seems like that's been the case. But, I mean, in the Hill situation, assuming good health, the Pats are on the hook for $200,000, which is the signing bonus plus a workout bonus. So, I mean, this is a complete...
Yes,
there's no risk here at all for a guy who ran for 1,000 yards for a bad offense 3 years ago.
Yeah, low risk, high reward. But again, are you seeing him being the 1,000-yard guy? He lost his job twice. They let him become a free agent. His only offers were hardly any guaranteed money deal. The only upside I can say is, yes, he had a good year 3 years ago, and he's young. Those are the only good things I can say about this deal. Between all the pitfalls that we just said and now – four running backs on the roster, again, it stunts your ability to take a running back higher up who can be an impact player.
This sounds like yet another Patriots signing of a guy who's going to have one game where he runs for 120 yards and three touchdowns and then does nothing the rest of the season. This team seems full of those guys.
I was looking at some of the running backs, and if you can get a running back, I don't know where these guys are. I'm not the draft expert. Rashad Penny, I brought up before from San Diego State. Is he a third, a fourth, a fifth? I don't know where these guys drop to, you know, when they're not. I love this guy. This guy could be like one of those diamonds in the rough. What was Terrell Davis was a sixth round pick. I mean, you could get Bo Scarborough, a kid out of Alabama, never reached his potential, never came close. For some reason, I think he's going to be better in the NFL. This is a guy you can get in the sixth round or something like that. I think Belichick has done his homework. I can't even tell you about the running backs that I'm sure he's done his homework on, other than a couple of those like that. I'm sure they'll get a good one in the late round.
And the other thing about Hill is this is going to be sort of a prove-it year for him. I mean, in a lot of ways. He comes to New England with nothing to lose, gets a one-year deal. If he plays well, he might get that fat contract. As you said, he's still only 25.
But do you like it from the sense of I just said? Don't you see the risk in this? I mean, it's again, there's not risk in terms of contract risk, but don't you see much more of a chance for failure than upside here?
Yes.
Like I just said a few minutes ago,
I see the same old Patriots thing where he has one or two big games and everyone gets excited, and then he's just on the back burner.
When I see these moves, I'm not saying, yeah, look at that. If I'm a Patriot fan, they're going back to the Super Bowl. I don't see that at all. I just think what he's doing is plugging up a bunch of holes, thinking he's the smartest guy in the room, that if they play his system, it doesn't make a difference who's in the game. He'll get it done. I think Belichick let his ego screw this team up. I think some guys left the team that he didn't want to leave, and he forced them out, like a Malcolm Butler and stuff like that. I think he's going to give it one more year. I don't think he wants to see what Tom Brady's going to look like 2 years from now or 3 years from now. I think he realizes, I'll give it one more year, let me patch all the leaks, I'll put duct tape on it, and if I can't get it done, I'm out of here.
Yeah, but it's worked forever. He keeps doing this every year. He brings in three or four running backs who have had, 500-yard seasons the last 2 years in a row. And
the guy who had a 100-yard season last year, though.
But my point is, though, there have been must be 100 running backs that Belichick has brought in his reign of terror at New England that have been just like this, just like this guy. Well, am I wrong?
No, that's why you said I could see them going in the fifth or sixth round, getting themselves a running back. Now, what about Patterson? What did you think about that deal? Them picking him up, right?
I like this move more. This team's trading a lot of draft picks, and they ended up just basically swapping. So they acquired Patterson and a sixth for a fifth round pick. I mean, that's the – so, no, you didn't give up a ton there, but – you're still trading higher value picks because of what you said earlier in hour one. Win now. Win now at all costs. And they're willing to sacrifice any draft position and certain years' draft picks to try to do that. And I think I agree with that statement because of where they are in terms of Belichick and Brady's commitment levels at this point. You don't know how much longer you have with them, so you want to win now. Look, Patterson's going to fill the void of Deion Lewis.
Right.
He's probably going to he might be better than Deion Lewis. He's led the league 3 times in kickoff return average. He's been a 3-time All-Pro, a multi-time Pro Bowler. I'm not getting jacked up about him as a wide receiver, but as a kick returner, then yes, fine.
You know what this sounds like? Who did they try to get from Seattle again? Michael Bennett, is that who they
yes.
tried? It sounds like they went with plan A. They couldn't get plan A. They went with plan B, and plan B didn't work out. So now they're on plan C, which is, all right, let's get Hill, let's get Patterson, let's start making trades, let's clog up the holes, we'll deal with the draft. It sounds like they're just kind of going on the fly here. This does not sound like a Super Bowl caliber team.
It does. I mean, if you're looking at grades, I just see this as a bunch of B-minus, C-plus pickups.
Yeah, I see the same thing, Rich.
But yeah, but if you understand what Patterson is there for, he's not there to catch 85 passes. They're going to have Cooks. Well, hopefully do that.
But I told you when Amendola left that you're going to lose paying him $1 million, which is chump change, $1.5 million. Now you got to replace him and pay more to the guy.
You replace Amendola with Edelman.
No, you still got to – just because he was out doesn't mean that you still don't have to bring in another guy after that.
Well, Patterson's here to return kicks, and he's about the best in the league at it, so I have no problem with that. I'm not expecting him to catch 80 passes.
The only thing about the offensive side that gets me excited is that I want to see the creativity – from Josh McDaniels. I want to see that. And last year we saw it week 2 against New Orleans. They had Cooks doing all kinds of different things. They had Amendola and Hogan doing all kinds of different things. I like seeing that creative side of the offense. And if they can use Patterson as the gadget guy and just get Cooks going vertically down the field and stop, having to use him as the gadget guy, then maybe that opens up the field even more for Cooks. If Patterson and Edelman can become gadget guys, then more, Cooks can focus more on just catching the ball vertically down the field. Outside of that, there's not a whole lot that appeals to me here offensively.
By the way, just on a little side note, on all these signings, all these trades, all these maneuvers, Is McDaniels learning? I mean, isn't that what this is all about, right? McDaniels just has to learn the Belichick way and try to figure out how to do this. Is he learning? I'm just wondering because I haven't heard his name being called out there that he's supposed to be on Belichick's side learning this whole thing.
Well,
you know?
he didn't get to go to the combine. So
that's what I'm saying.
That instantly struck a negative chord with me.
You know, I wonder, and I guess you can't say anything, but I wonder if somebody like him is saying, I don't like that move, I don't like that move, but what can you say to Belichick? I wonder if he's like, yeah, you're teaching me that I don't want to do that. I don't know. Can you say that to the guy that's been really successful or no?
Remember, there was the article by Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, last week that said maybe Belichick's just done with listening to people. He wants people who are only going to follow his way of thinking, and he wants only players who are devout followers of him.
I'm not so sure he's going about this the right way. I'm not saying he hasn't done a great job before. That doesn't mean he's doing the right thing right now. You know?
I got to admit, as I'm sitting out there in the grass, in the grass in left field, and I'm hearing, I'm looking on my phone and seeing more and more guys leaving town. I mean, it was quite a chaotic scene leaving town for the Patriots last week. I thought, you know what? Maybe there is something to this. These guys are just walking away.
You know, you guys said that Farrell, one of the big reasons he's not here anymore is because he didn't relate to the players. He wasn't a player guy, so they bring in Cora, who's more relatable and, more rah-rah here. Well, you know what? Belichick, if you don't become more relatable, if you still don't change as you get older, and the millennials no longer respect you or no longer want to listen to what you say because you're old and crotchy and whatever that word is.
Crotchety.
Hey, I want that word. Don't steal that from me. But if you don't go ahead and change, then people are not going to, no matter how successful you are, like Bobby Knight, he never changed. It was always his way. Mm-hmm. Till the very end. You can't do that. You cannot change.
Well,
you know?
It's not like these guys they're bringing in don't know that. You know, Patterson knows that. Jeremy Hill knows exactly what he's in for.
Well, Patterson was traded. He didn't have a say in it.
Okay, but I mean, the guys that make the decision to come to New England, it's not like they don't know what they're in for.
Yes, and we understand. Look, some guys just need jobs with whoever's willing to give it to them. Some guys want the possibility of winning a championship. They do know that. Arnie, I think you can get away with being old and crotchety more in football still than in baseball or basketball. And I think it will change for football too eventually, but I still think football is the one sport, maybe hockey to a degree also, that still allows you to be that, that tough, mean cuss on the side.
Zach in South Burlington said you guys are underselling both Hale and especially Claiborne. Both are huge pickups there. That's
Claiborne, I think, is a good pickup. You pair him with Dietrich Wise. I like that on the defensive front. You go and draft another guy, too. Remember Derek Rivers, their first pick last year. He was a third rounder. He was out for the entire season with a torn ACL. We never even saw him. So there's potential there. Claiborne, get after the quarterback. That's a good thing. Hill does nothing for me right now.
And the most truest text that ever's coming onto this show, Bridge, the most truest ever. On the Town Fair Tire text line comes from Vince. Is Brady getting a full show tonight? He's been getting off easy lately.
Yeah.
That is the truest thing.
I haven't done a show for 11 days.
But this guy's never done the full Champlain Valley game night anymore from 6 to 7. I've been letting him off after a half hour.
And in 2 weeks.
15 minutes, no show.
In 2 weeks, he won't have any every night.
You stay the full hour today, Brady. Even Vince says that you've been getting off very easily. I'm putting my foot down. You must stay the whole hour. What do you think about that?
I love it. And by the way, I just looked up crotchy, and there's no chance I'm announcing what it means, according to the Urban Dictionary.
Oh, so there is a word called crotchy.
Well, sort of.
It's in the Urban Dictionary. Yes. It's not a real word.
Okay, well,
breaking news, the Patriots have released veteran linebacker Shea McClellan. The guy who was a big part of the team last year, though, missed the whole year with injury.
All right, am I missing something? A first-time texter said just text in Jordy Nelson.
He says Travis in Berkshire.
Okay.
Wow.
Says that, is Berkshire in Vermont?
It's a tiny little place up on the Canadian border.
Travis in Berkshire says New England Patriots need to sign Jordy Nelson. Well, they could do that if he hadn't already signed with the Raiders.
I was about to say, wasn't that official? Because I know that he was going to sign with the Raiders. I thought it was official. I'm like, did I miss something?
Official.
Did he not pass something? I thought maybe he didn't, he had that bad injury and that maybe didn't pass the physical or something like that. By the way, that's a good pickup by the Raiders. Not many people are talking about that. That would have been a great pickup for the Patriots. Yeah. I do agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Who, Jordy Nelson?
Jordy Nelson, yeah.
I mean, how many
Amendolas can you have?
No, but I just feel like he's get lost in the shuffle. There's so many wide receivers.
He comes with a little bit bigger price tag and a guy that's coming off injuries, And believe me, if he had anything left in the tank, see, that's a guy you really can't take. You want to know why? Because Aaron Rodgers is so outspoken. When you got rid of his quarterback coach, he went to the media and announced it. They got rid of my quarterback coach without telling me. If Jordy Nelson had anything left in the tank and they got rid of him, without going to him, oh my goodness, he'd be like on Times Square with a bullhorn, just yelling at people. So the fact that Aaron Rodgers was probably okay with Jordy leaving, maybe there's something more to those injuries. And it was not a great year. He missed also a couple more games after he came back from the injury. He missed like two or three more games, did he not? Toward the end of the year.
Aaron Rodgers was subtly outspoken. Remember, he was all over social media.
But that was just being politically correct. I think if Jordy Nelson had anything left in the tank, he would have been more outspoken. But I still think it's a good pickup by the Raiders anyway. All right, Brady, what is coming up next?
Monday Mirages, five stories in sports. Are things always as they appear?
Mirages next, right here on 103 ESPN.
Monday Mirages.
Well, I called them Mirages for sure.
Everyone knows
it's
Monday.
It's Monday. It's not Wednesday Mirages. Gosh, next.
Phone lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, real quick, Allison Monkton said, Hill equals Gillisley, neither are special, but I trade Jonathan Stewart for either. I agree with Brady, why fill a roster spot with a low-ceiling player?
Smart texter.
Sean in Colchester said, can the Stowe High School girls ice hockey team get a shout-out for winning their first Division II title? That is Sean from Colchester.
Sean in Colchester wants the Stowe team to get a shout-out. Interesting. Yeah. But, well, hey, sure, congratulations.
What was the score, Rich?
Really?
I don't know.
Phoenix?
I don't know. What are you asking me for?
And by the way, yes, congratulations to the Stowe girls. First time they've ever won. And also, good luck to the Milton boys basketball team. They're heading down to, probably as we speak, heading down to the Barry Auditorium. No finer place to see a high school basketball game on this planet than the Barry Auditorium when it's rocking.
For some reason, I can't find this, but someone said Hill is equal to Corey Dillon. That's what it was. I don't know who sent it in.
It was someone on Facebook.
Facebook.
That would be great. I'll take that.
I think they more just mean getting a Bengals running back. In which case, maybe Hill would be more like Rex Burkhead, another former Bengals running back. Now
Corey Dillon was a very helpful part of a Super Bowl for the Patriots. I'd love to turn Hill into that.
Still got Adrian Peterson out there.
I see. He's gone again.
Still can get him.
Have you ever seen a guy's career just fall off a cliff faster than that guy's?
Derrick Rose.
He's 30.
Yeah, same idea.
I mean, the running backs do that. That's what happens when they get to 30. All right, let's go ahead and get to Monday Mirages. Monday Mirages.
It's right there.
Monday.
I see he's changed over the 11 days.
Or in Arnie's words, just Mirages. Question one. You are enjoying this March Madness NCAA tournament with all the upsets, real or mirage?
I'm enjoying the upsets. I don't enjoy the results with Arizona being out. I just can't enjoy it. It's like being on a diet and going to a buffet and watching everybody chow down, but you're told you could only have salad with no dressing. I'm not having a good time. I enjoy the upsets, but I'm not having a good time with my Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, I was going to say the Buffalo. What are they called? The Buffalo
Bulls. Yeah, but they call them the Buffalo. Bills when they introduced them.
I just can't believe your team lost to Buffalo.
Believe me, we've already lost to Miami of Ohio in the first round. East Tennessee State.
I just burst out laughing.
Stop. It's the State University of New York system that both Oswego and Plattsburgh reside
in.
Right. Do not hate on SUNY.
That's right. We could call them SUNY Buffalo. That's
exactly what they are.
So that's sort of like Plattsburgh State beating Arizona.
Yeah. Yes. I need revenge. I want to schedule them next year.
Oh. I absolutely love it. As I said, I'm not a huge regular season basketball guy other than UVM, St. Mike's, and Middlebury and Plattsburgh. But, I mean,
Norwich and Castleton and Linden don't get follows either?
Basically local schools. But I couldn't get enough of it. It helped that we were all over the place between City Sports Grills and all three McGillicuddies over the weekend. But it just seemed like that. I love the David and Goliath thing. I really do. And it was great to see the underdogs win. I mean, you think there's any rivalry there yesterday between Marshall and West Virginia?
Oh, jeez.
Did you see the governor? The governor of West Virginia was there.
What do you do in that case?
He had a custom-made suit where one sleeve was navy and one sleeve was green. So he had the custom-tailored suit.
Loyola Chicago with Sister Mary Elephant or whatever that woman's name is, and she's 98 years
Sister
old.
Jean.
Sister Jean.
Sister Jean, yeah. Sorry, I'm showing my years here.
Doesn't take long for one moron to. Did you see that tweet?
No. Well, maybe.
Which talk show think? Host from Fox Sports Radio in somewhere in Tennessee decided he wanted to put out a tweet about Sister Jean, and it wasn't very funny. That's all I'll just say. It wasn't very funny, and immediately got in big trouble on Twitter about that.
I thought the weirdest thing about a lot of these upsets is several of them weren't even close. You know, I mean, you look at Texas A&M by 21 over North Carolina. How does that happen? Not to mention, everybody says what an incredible upset the UMBC over Virginia thing was. It killed them. I mean, the second half, that game was over.
Can you read the text from Cody in St. Albans?
I feel you, man.
Hold on. Yeah. Cody in St. Albans definitely meant to text his buddy and then send it to us.
No,
that's not
for
meant
us.
For us.
Yes. Remember, it's like being on a diet.
Oh.
If you're enjoying it, because I feel you, man. Being on a diet sucks. I'd rather have a burger, shakes, and fries than damn rabbit food. I said, yeah, I can't enjoy the NCAA tournament when my Wildcats were eliminated. I said, it's like go to the buffet and everybody gets to chow and you're on a diet.
Yes, it's real that I'm enjoying the tournament right now with its craziness, but it comes at a point. The first weekend of upsets is great. I enjoy 16 over 1, and I enjoy 11 over 6 and 12 over 5 and seeing a couple of double-digit seeds get into the Sweet 16. That's great. But do you really want a Final Four that features Nevada? Do you really want a Final Four that features even Kansas State?
I would have loved to see UMBC in the finals against Duke just to see.
Absolutely.
Just to see what the ratings would be. I just find it so hard to say. Maybe it'd be the same, but to say it would plummet? I don't lose 30%. I don't buy that.
I agree with part of what you said. I think if you have an 11 and a 7, say a Nevada,
right,
Loyola,
yeah,
Chicago,
yeah,
in a championship game, that just isn't interesting because there's no real upset
it's
factor.
It's not David
there.
And Goliath.
No, you need Duke and you need Loyola, Chicago. Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Question two, Monday Mirage is here on the huddle. UVM should be happy for the success of conference rival UMBC. Real or Mirage?
Let me give you an analogy here. Remember when American Idol started, right? Ryan Seacrest was not the only host of that. You know that, don't you?
Of course not.
Simon Cowell.
No. There was another guy. His name is like Duncan something or other. Duncan
Hines.
No, look up his name. Duncan. It's something stupid last name, like a real stupid last name. He decided, I don't want to do this show anymore. It's going to pigeonhole me into this. I'm a serious actor and a big-time TV guy. I don't want to do this anymore. He quits. And of course, it becomes
Brian Dunkelman.
Dunkelman, that's it. Becomes a big success. Have you ever heard of Brian Dunkelman?
It's like Pete Best, who is gone from the Beatles, and Ringo joins him. And
how'd that work out? You ever? So, back to the question: UVM should not be happy. They should be jealous as hell, like Dunkelman is of Ryan Seacrest. You should be jealous what UMBC accomplished because you beat them twice. You had them beat a third time, and everything they accomplished was supposed to go to you. And it went to them instead because you blew a 9-point lead. I'd be sick to my stomach over it.
You have to answer me what the phrase UVM should be happy. What do you mean? Fan UVM. Base, crowds, the college.
The
players.
UVM.
Okay, well then I'm going to give you two answers here. One real, one mirage. If you're the fan base of UVM, I think that you are happy, so I'll say real. If you are the players, you are very unhappy.
The fan base is happy when you give them a free pizza. Stop it.
I think what's best for the America East, I think eventually, is what the fan base wants.
I'll say it's real because there's more parts of UVM that should be happy than upset. The players should absolutely be upset. They should be bitter, jealous, salty, motivated, angry, embarrassed, all of the above, all of which I'm sure they are. Athletic administration, the university as a whole, should be happy. More money comes into the conference now. $3.7 million is going to come into the league as a whole, of which UVM, is going to get a portion of that. If it's distributed evenly, they're going to get $365,000 to the athletic department. It raises the conference profile. It might help seeding in the future just because of conference recognition. That is all a good thing. The players, though, themselves are definitely upset. Question three in Monday Mirage is, you like the moves the Patriots have made within the last week, real or mirage?
It's so-so, more so than so. It doesn't do anything. You're trying to plug holes from guys you're going to miss. I don't think you quite got back up to that same level. Absolutely not going to say, oh my goodness, you're back on track to go back to the Super Bowl. I think it was just holes to plug, and they were desperate, and I don't think it's a good look on them, to be honest with you, Rich.
I think the Adrian Claiborne pickup is okay. As I said last hour, I give the team a B-, C-plus, somewhere in that meh kind of range, although in college a B minus or C plus.
Oh, very good.
A cause for celebration.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention high school, elementary school, and
take
so
you out
on.
For but, ice cream if you get that.
But the Claiborne thing, who knows? I mean, you look and you see this guy's had 9.5 sacks last year, but 6 of them were in one game. What was he doing for the other 15 games? The Jeremy Hill thing, I don't see anything in that. I think the Cordell Patterson thing is a good move, simply because you get a very good kick returner, and that's all I'm looking for from him.
I'll say it's real, but it's a 60-40 real. It's not overwhelmingly real. Move of Claiborne is good. We're going to pair him with Dietrich Wise. Trey Flowers is in there as well on the interior. You're going to get Derek Rivers, your first pick from last year, back, who missed the whole season with injury. I'm excited to see what Claiborne can do. He's going to be 30 years old, so he's a bit older, but he's a guy with some experience. Patterson to fill the hole that Lewis leave behind in the kick return game. That is good. I'm out on the Jeremy Hill move. I know it's very, very low risk, but I don't see a high reward coming from it. Matt Tobin, the signing of him on the offensive line, is a big one. The team loses Solder, and they might lose both Cameron Fleming and LeAdrian Waddle, who are both in Dallas. So I like that move as well. And as far as Jason McCourty goes, they need help at defensive back with Malcolm Butler gone. This is a guy who played well last year, even in subpar conditions in Cleveland, but he's 30 years old also. It's not a long-term move, but as far as next year goes, I think that's a good move too. Question number 4, the Jets moved up to the number 3 pick in the draft, so now the Giants have to respond with a big move of their own, real or mirage?
No, they don't have to do anything. They're sitting pretty at number 2. Mm-hmm. The reason why they've not made any big signings or big splashes is because Eli's got 1 year left. They realize that. They're like, we're not going to help you out, old man. Just finish out this year, and then when Josh Rosen, who we're going to take with the second pick, is going to be our permanent quarterback after this one more year, your goodbye year, then we'll start adding the pieces to the puzzle. So I totally think that's the way it's going to play out.
I agree. This is completely a mirage because the Giants own New York. I mean, until the Jets start winning, and I know they have a rabid fan base, the Jets do, and God bless them. I don't know how they do it.
Fireman Ed.
I have no idea how they keep showing up week after week.
That was a terrible trade.
Year after year for that dumpster fire of a football team, but the Giants, they could have seasons like they did this year, and people will stay with them to the very end. I think they're exactly in the spot they want to be. I would say that's a big mirage.
This is mirage for sure. The Jets have to make splashes to keep up with the Giants. It doesn't go the other way around.
Right.
The Giants are the ones with Super Bowls this decade, with Super Bowls inside the last 30 years. The Giants have. It was called Giant Stadium forever, not Jet Stadium.
That's right.
The Jets are the ones that need to keep up with the Joneses when it comes to the Giants, not the other way
around.
Horrible
trade, by the way, to give up what, number 31, 30, or 36?
No, you have 3 seconds.
I thought that was an awful trade.
Insane.
If you're going Indianapolis, geez. All of a sudden, I mean, that's their fans must be dancing in the streets.
Insane to do something like that, to move up 3 spots, and you're not going to get a quarterback. You're going to get Barkley. That's what you're going to get.
Question number 5. Monday Mirage is here on the Huddle. David Ortiz spoke to Buster Olney today for his podcast, and he said Mookie Betts should be the next leader of the Red Sox. Real or mirage?
I will say mirage. Seriously, is this guy outspoken enough, a good enough player? A guy that people respect enough in the clubhouse to say, yes, he's going to lead us to the World Series? Or does it have to be somebody like a Sale, a pitcher, or somebody like that? I don't know. I certainly don't think about it as Mookie Betts being the leader of this team to take you all the way there. I don't see that.
Should he be? Maybe, because he's probably the best player on the team, at least the best hitter on the team. But I think it's a mirage. I don't think that's his personality. He seems like a happy-go-lucky guy who has fun. They're doing the outfield dance after every win. He throws 300s every time he bowls. I just think he just seems like he's a guy who's more interested in just having fun.
And that's Pedroia's job anyway.
So, I see that too, but Pedroia doesn't want it.
Yeah,
who is the fiery guy in the clubhouse then? Is it? I agree, Chris Sale seems like that guy who wants to bite your head off if you say the wrong thing. Maybe he's the guy.
I think it's real. I think it is Betts, but I think it's more of process of elimination. He's the guy who's there. He's under contract still for a few years. He's the guy that the team's going to want to re-sign, despite the bad blood of the arbitration process. He's going to be their biggest priority. Sale's a free agent after next season. Price isn't trusted to be the leader that the team needs positively. Kimbrell's a free agent at the end of the year. There's just not that many choices. And Pedroia, Arnie wants to trade him tomorrow so he can't be the leader of the team.
I do want to trade him tomorrow. I would Betts trade him today.
Betts has to want to be the clubhouse guy. He'll want to be that guy. You can't just tell him he is
the
guy.
The leader doesn't always have to be somebody who's yelling in people's faces. I think it can be a guy, though, who goes over to you in the clubhouse when you're having a tough day, puts his arm around you and says, hey, buddy, let's watch some video together. I think that's more in Betts' ballpark than screaming at everyone. Look, Sale and Pedroia are the fiery guys. They're more likely to get into your face. But I think from an overall leader perspective, I think it's Mookie Betts. And let's not discount Alex Cora. They brought him in there to be Mr. Kumbaya. He needs to be a leader also.
What about a position? Like in football, the leader is always either the quarterback or the middle linebacker. That fiery middle linebacker guy that everybody's afraid of. In baseball, I always thought that the leader kind of was the number one pitcher on the team.
Now, the pitcher generally isn't the leader because they don't play enough respect from the...
They're always the ones hiding in the corner of the dugout when they're not pitching.
Ideally, it's somebody who plays up the middle. If your catcher, your shortstop, or your center fielder are your best players, they would be... Like Buster Posey would be the leader of the Giants.
He was perfect.
If your catcher, your center fielder, your shortstop are your leader, it should be them. That's it.
All right. Somebody did want to ask you a question, Rich. This is Jordan in Fairfield. I'd be interested to hear Rich's thoughts on David Backus's having a target on his back by the NHL.
Ridiculous.
Seems ridiculous that one of the most well-respected players in the league get hit with a suspension because he plays for the Bruins. I'm not sure it's because it's
the Bruins, but I mean that match penalty the other night was absolutely preposterous. I'm throwing things at my television in that game. I mean, they're just making stuff up if they call that a hit from behind and a 2, a 5, and a 10 on that play.
Though I will say, though, they do target – I don't think they target the Bruins, just some players on the Bruins. Does that make sense?
Well, Marchand has got to be less stupid.
Jesus.
It's his own damn fault.
Oh, my goodness. I was just going to curse that. That guy's got to get his head together.
Yes, he does.
I mean, Mike, did you see the goal that he had? I forgot how many games it was with like 2 seconds left or something.
Oh, yeah. He's been unbelievable. How many game-winning goals can a guy score in one season?
All right, Brady, I don't know if you saw this earlier on the Town Fair Tire text line. People very upset with you that you've not been doing full shows on Champlain Valley Game Night. So what's coming up tonight on Champlain Valley Game Night?
We'll talk with Ray Biggs, managing editor, d3hockey.com. He'll talk about Norwich, the women taking home the national championship at 6:40. And we'll get a little more into what we just talked about, the Giants not needing to respond to the Jets.
What is coming up next?
Daily spring training update. David Ortiz talks to Buster Olney and Fenway and Yankee Stadium get ranked by Forbes. Where do they rank?
We'll tell you about that when we get back right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow morning, everyone is listening to The Huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month. All right. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, show just flying by today. Got a little hoops today at the Wilson Central School. Going to go off, Brady. I'm feeling good.
What does Arnie mean when he says go off?
Well, he went 2 for 8 last week.
3 points.
You know, the 2 weeks ago when we played the team and I didn't play in the second half, we beat him by 2 when Brady was on the team. Brady didn't play last game. I replaced him in the starting lineup, and we won by 30.
And you were two for six.
I was 2 for...
And you scored 4 points.
2 for 8.
I scored 6. There were 3-pointers, Rich.
6 points. Well, that's right. You don't take 2-pointers.
I don't take 2-pointers.
Because that involves having to move.
And that Brady doesn't tell you about the defense I did, rebounding, and the lockdown D and all that good stuff there. All right, Brady, let's get to the spring training report. What do we got?
So Forbes today ranked the top ballparks in baseball, all 30 of them. They did it from a number of different vantage points. You know, the historic relevance of the ballpark, the layout of the ballpark, the amenities at the ballpark, the views at the ballpark. Overall, Fenway Park gets 7th. New Yankee Stadium gets 12th. What do you guys think?
Wait. What was the first one? Fenway had what?
Fenway was 7th.
All right, I've been, I don't know, Rich, you've been probably more than I have. I've been to the one up in AT&T, which is in San Francisco, which I believe is number 1 on the list.
It is.
Beautiful, but I guess price isn't in consideration. Is that what we're doing?
You're saying too expensive?
Oh, my goodness.
That is awful.
Oh, my goodness, man. You got to take out a small mortgage. Just to park at Wrigley, you got to, park in somebody's private garage. Yeah. That'll charge you, $30, $40, $50. But I've never been to Fenway. I've never been down to a Red Sox game.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, Dodger Stadium to me has always been the king of baseball stadiums.
Okay.
That is just beautiful.
That was number four.
Right there in the mountain. It's just scenic.
Very
affordable. Diehard baseball fans there. To me, Dodger Stadium's the best.
Yeah, AT&T Park was number one. It's funny, I just drove by it a couple of days ago. And I've been there off-season, took a tour and the whole thing. There wasn't a game being played, so I don't know if I qualify to comment about it. But it was pretty stunning.
Yeah.
My favorite baseball park, I've said it for years, is PNC Park, the home of the Pittsburgh Pirates. It is an unbelievable facility.
Never been there, but I hear it's nice.
You hear it what?
Here it's nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's that's always been my favorite place. I just added them up during the commercial break. I've been to 21 of 30.
Wow.
I would put AT&T Park just from a tour that
have
I had.
Have you seen games at 21 of 30?
No.
How many have you seen games?
I don't know. Probably 17, 18.
Okay.
The only other one I could think of where I didn't actually see a game, but I got a tour, was Coors Field.
Did you go to Wrigley?
That's beautiful. I've never set foot in Wrigley Field.
It's way over.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
stated.
You know, everybody says, oh, how can you poo-poo Fenway? How can it possibly be seventh? There might not be a more inconvenient situation in this world than trying to get by car into Fenway Park, in and out of that place, and then you get your seat for $150, and you're facing the left field wall. For most, it's just not a convenient place, and I know I'm going to get crushed for saying that, but it's not the best ballpark experience to me.
Look, I love the historical relevance of Fenway, the pillars in your eye from all different vantage points. You can't see that easily. I had great seats last year. Jess and I went behind home plate. You know, we were up high, second level, but behind home plate. Hardly any leg room.
Yeah.
Also, I found that inconvenient. I'm not huge on ballpark amenities, but look, I don't have kids, and the kids are what ballpark amenities are for. Where's the little, you know, where's the radar gun for you
to
throw
in? I thought you're talking food also when you
say
it.
You are, okay. But I'm saying when you throw in ballpark amenities, it's like, okay, which one has a playground
in
it? And okay, which one has the
mini field where the kids get to play with football or something.
And a lot of the newer ones have those kind of things. That's not big with me, but again, I don't have kids.
Right.
So Fenway falls short in all of those more modern-day amenities. But for me, I'm about just the game, so it's okay to me.
Have you been at Diamondbacks?
I was just there. Monstrosity
it
of a
is.
Stadium.
It's unbelievable. You know, my former partner had a choice of doing radio with me. He wasn't my partner. We were getting hooked up together in L.A. He decided he didn't want to work with me, and he became he's like president of the Diamondbacks.
Huh.
And he used to run the Dodgers, too.
Do I want to be with Arnie, or do I want to run a baseball team?
He went on, and instead of having a great career in radio with me here in Burlington, he's running the Diamondbacks.
I mean, look, Chase Field, which is Phoenix, is about as far away from a Fenway Wrigley experience as you could possibly
have.
But
it's still very nice.
It is nice, and it's convenient.
And they
get the restaurants all the amenities.
Behind the...
And a retractable roof, which you have to have because it's 120.
And the jacuzzi or the pool or whatever, you know?
Yeah, see, I don't care about that.
I know, because I'm not taking my shirt off.
But I'm... What a bummer. But PNC Park to me is the number one. AT&T Park, and we haven't even talked about Camden Yards, which is the original retro park and still as stunning as the day it was built.
Well, that's why it's number two in this list on Forbes. And they like it because the integration with the warehouse out in right field, and it is beautiful. I've seen a couple of games there. I went to Citi Field last year for the first time. I thought that was great. I thought that was awesome. The Pepsi porch out there in right field. There's a lot of stuff there if you were into beer and food, which a lot of people are at ball games. I thought that was great. As far as new Yankee Stadium goes, too corporate. It lost the feel of old Yankee Stadium. You don't feel the ghosts there. You don't feel the demons there if you're not a Yankee fan. Those things were very prevalent to me at old Yankee Stadium. They're not at new Yankee Stadium. A lot of the things there that you can do, you can't actually do because they're too expensive. The food's expensive. The stores are expensive. Monument Park is cool, but you can't easily get to it. So I think 12th is probably about right.
I'm a New Yorker, but damn, the New Yorkers make that experience at Yankee Stadium pure hell.
Yes.
I got to tell you something. Because I showed up late to the game, two innings in. I had tickets in the right field bleachers, and nobody would get out of my seat. And I told the police officer. And he goes, guess what? Next time you'll get here early. Now get the hell out of here. He's like, I'm not moving anybody. Wow. What's wrong with you? He goes, go sit on the left side. You don't have to be here.
You know what I think
idiot?
The most underrated Major League Stadium is? Because it's like the only one left from the 70s is Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City.
That was in the top 10. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, we haven't talked about that. That place is really
took
nice.
Away the hill, right? They took away the
the waterfalls.
The waterfall.
Yeah.
No, but what's
the hill was in Houston.
Oh, Houston. That's right. That was bugging
Yeah, they
the hell
did
out.
Get rid of that. Jeez. But Kauffman Stadium, incredibly easy to get to. It's right on the interstate and a million miles of parking, and it's just a great stadium.
Last story, Stanley, coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Now, I was going to talk about the Brewers doing a video, the remake of what, The Sandlot. I know
that was great.
You love that, Brady, which I still have not seen The Sandlot. I want you to know that.
Well, you're ridiculous.
I know me neither.
I know that.
You're both ridiculous. Could you tell us about Joel Embiid?
Well, why? I didn't see a story on that. What happened
he
there?
He spent $12,000 on his birthday party, on just alcohol at his birthday party, and he was partying with the Sixers co-owner.
Oh, look at that. Maybe he wants to buy part of the team.
Apparently, they didn't have a game that night.
He bought out the bar, including Magnum bottles of Don Perignon.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty pricey. And I was going to give Brady and Buster only a lot of credit. I mean, they're the baseball guys, and when they told us Babe Ruth was coming into this league, they were right. I mean,
oh my goodness,
Shea Ohtani, ERA of 27.
Yes, I
and,
saw that.
By the way, also batting .083, 2-for-24. So far in the spring there, Brady.
It's spring training, Arnie.
7 runs in a third of an inning.
Babe Ruth, yeah, I'm loving it. I'm going to love this whole time. I'm just going to watch the Angels just to see this guy. I'm telling you that.
Well, at least they're not paying him anything.
I love it. Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night tonight?
We'll talk about Norwich Women's Hockey's national championship at 6:40. We'll give you an update at a Red Sox spring training, and we'll have more on UMBC's improbable win over Virginia.
All right, Rich, welcome back from vacation.
Thank you.
Brady's got Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next for Brady, Rich, Arnie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.